Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. It is episode 40. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Yes.
little self-applause there. Yeah.
Woo!
Standing
I'm
ovation.
Doing the bicep pose right here.
Mm-hmm.
40 consecutive weeks.
That's right. 40 consecutive weeks releasing internationally, simultaneously, worldwide distribution.
Simultaneous
just like
international distribution.
Mm-hmm. That's us.
The dedication to quality is amazing.
It's domination. It's dedication and domination. That's
absolutely
what we're serving up every week.
Woo!
It's amazing.
It's hard to keep up.
So should we talk about some television? I think that's the purpose of this podcast. Is this a podcast about television?
This is what we do. A podcast about television.
Hmm.
I remember when that was on.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, good times.
Hey, you watched a couple of shows that you usually, you know, make me watch. A couple of nerdy shows. You
I
watched. First off, you watched and wrote a review on The Hollywood Reporter. I'll link to it. You watched Humans.
Yes. I really liked it. I really did
this
like it.
This is AMC?
This is AMC.
It's a co-production.
Co-production with Channel 4.
Okay.
In Britain.
In Britain. I will refer to that as BBC Channel 4, because as far as I'm concerned, it's all just BBC in the UK, but it is not actually BBC. It is actually independent commercial broadcaster Channel 4. So how was it?
I really liked it. Oh. I really liked it. It was, you know, it's based on a Swedish series called Real Humans, but apparently, to my knowledge, it's already aired. The first season of 8, I believe, is already aired completely in England. Mm. And I believe they made changes. I did not see the Swedish version, but I believe they made some changes, made it certainly a little more British.
Sure. Less Swedish in the script?
Probably less Swedish. Everything has to be like a little bit toned down on the Swedish.
Hmm.
Right? Usually you get that in your notes when you write a story. A little less Swedish
notes. A little less depressing.
Right. But we love the furniture.
Not so many snow scenes, but yeah, furniture. Good. Keep the furniture.
Love the furniture. So, it was written by Sam Vincent and Jonathan Brackley, who are the guys who wrote Spooks.
Oh, MI5 yes. In the U.S., right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great show.
So they, and so it's a great show, very high quality. And my review, as you link into it, will basically said, look, no other people but genre people, and you're one of them, tend to say, I've seen that already. You know, no one who's in a non-genre drama ever says, you know this storyline where the protagonist is kind of like conflicted. He's a little bit of dark, you know, a dark underside. He's not really all good.
Mm.
I've seen that a billion times. I don't want to watch it anymore. But like, if you tell somebody, hey, it's about it's like about robots. It's about synthetic, artificial intelligent robots. People are like, robots.
It's like, that's like almost human. It's just almost humans. How is it that it's practically the same show?
It's almost humans,
and
but
it's
they're
not
cops.
Even close. Yeah, they're
right.
Not cops.
They're not cops. But people tend to tune out. And I don't have that, so I tuned in.
That's good. So it's like is it more like a family drama kind of thing where there's robots and humans?
Well, I think I give them credit for taking the idea. And again, I didn't see the Swedish one, so it could have been Lars Lundstrom who created it there. But I give Vincent and Brackley credit for making this work just beyond the fact that having a synth is what they call it.
Mm.
Having a synth is kind of like the new Apple. Like, yeah, well, let's upgrade to the new iPad or the new iWatch.
It's the latest gadget that people
It's the latest gadget. And the premise is basically that synths have been around in England for a while now. You can still, you know, in fact, William Hurt is in this. Strangely, okay. No accent, but and I'm not sure they're going to explain it later that he's was an American scientist. But anyway, he was an engineer who worked on the original synths. And this is an example of how I think the writers have made this series really interesting. He doesn't want to give up his synth, Odie, this young man, because Odie has he just feels like he's a family member. Which they get into. Like, you can – a lot of people just treat their synths like, you know, like they're – you know,
like they're humans,
dumb tin cans, and other ones, you know, computers, and other ones treat them like their family because they do take the family name, which is interesting. So the family last name. And so the thing that I found interesting in this William Hurt angle is not only does he feel like he can't get rid of Odie, But he's using Odie to rely on memories that he can no longer recall because he has early onset Alzheimer's. So it's a very interesting story there. The twist to that, not even a twist, but just kind of a nice thing, is that Odie is kind of a crappy version as well. And Odie is having malfunctions. He can't remember things. So it's kind of interesting. He's relying on this one. He doesn't want to upgrade, but the government wants to recycle those. And he's been hiding him for a long time, and he doesn't want him to be recycled. So that's an interesting thing. But it's really interesting how I think how they get into the more personal human angle. For example, we meet the couple at the center of the story, and she is – I mean, there's other issues to come, but she is a lawyer. She travels a lot. They have three kids. Previously, she had said, no way are we getting a synth because I don't trust them, and they create, you know, lazy behavior in the kids. Well, anyway, she's apparently travels a lot. And this, when we first meet this family, they she has traveled and said she would be back in 2 days. That's now 5 days, and she's not back. And the husband who works is overwhelmed, and he makes a one-off decision on his own to go get a synth. He gets the synth, who is an amazingly beautiful synth.
Of course.
Yes. But you know what? Here's the thing. They haven't explained. They sent two episodes for critics to watch, and not in the first two did they explain whether you can pick your own – how it looks. You would think you would be able to do that. But the way it's presented in the story is they just wheel this synth out that he agrees to, and when they unzip it – like he's already paid for it basically. They're handing him the operating manual. And when they unzip it, it's this beautiful woman, Gemma Chan, the actress, who's amazing in this. So you kind of – that's the part I wanted to answer. Like you would think that you would be able to choose your own. But there was also a hint in another part of the story where it's clear that maybe you don't get to choose what they look like. You just buy one and it's delivered. So anyway, in this, he immediately the synth, which they name Anita, starts cooking great meals. She gets the house organized. Everybody's happy. But when the wife comes home, obviously she's not too pleased. But not because that, you know, the actress Gemma Chan is gorgeous, but because she feels like she was a crappy mom and that she's going to be replaced. And her really small daughter, who's I think 5 or 6, you know, says things like, "No, mommy, I want her to read the book because she doesn't rush." Stuff that kind of guts you, which you know you do as a parent because you're stressed and you. Maybe you don't have time to read it that night, or but the synth is not like that. And so she feels like, oh, gosh, she's going to be replaced. And then on top of all of that, there are bigger mysteries about, hey, maybe some of these synths actually are way more advanced than we think they are, and they're being tracked by different people. So there's larger mysteries at play, sure. Jason. So two episodes in, I was like, hey, I like it. The acting's solid. The writing's solid. I want to see more.
That's a great mixture of people. I think people, especially who don't watch a lot of genre stuff, think and bad genre stuff is like that, where it's kind of one plane. It's sort of like wacky ideas, like we can get by on just the wacky ideas, and you really need to have characters. You need to have I think having the world building be really interesting. Like, what does this say about us today? And like you likening it to the latest Apple product, I think that's really interesting. And then yeah, you put a layer on there that's the maybe an overarching story about where, you know, where this comes from and what might be going on. I think that's all that sounds fantastic to me. That I like my genre TV with a whole bunch of those different layers, because otherwise it's, you know, it's flat and not as appealing as drama, I think.
Exactly. And one of the things that I did like about it too is that of the three kids that they have, you know, got that, and they did a really great job. So obviously the little kid is just like another mom that has more patience. The middle kid is a boy. He's I think he's like 12 or 13, and of course he just thinks, oh my god, she's so hot, right? He's just like, but the teenage daughter angle I find really interesting because I didn't think of it. I mean, I didn't go into humans like thinking about the world view until I saw it, but they have a really interesting connection to the teenage daughter. She was a bookworm. She was a high, you know, valedictorian. She was a big learner, and now she doesn't care anymore. Because basically she says, why would I go and get a degree in medicine when the synths are going to do the job for half the price and they're never going to make a mistake? And so the idea is presented through her is that this generation that's coming up in England has no motivation to be anything or do anything right. because they feel like the synths are going to take all their jobs.
Right. Right. So what, I like that. What's the future for them?
Right.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's awfully convenient to have those servants there, but
right.
But what does that mean for you?
Right.
What,
exactly.
What are you going to do if they can do all this stuff for you?
Yeah. And so I liked it. I would tell people. Yeah, definitely. You want to watch that one.
All right.
That is Sunday, the 28th, by the way.
All right. Excellent. Humans.
Humans.
Humans. So Humans, a show with robots. There's also Mr. Robot, a show without robots, I think.
Only humans.
Only humans.
Yeah.
Mr. Robot is a human, I believe. Is that accurate? You saw Mr. Robot, didn't you?
I did. I saw Mr. Robot.
USA, we should say it's a silver lining, right? We're out of the blue skies now and into the silver lining.
So awesome. It's such a bad, bad tagline. Oh, I wish I was sitting in that session when it happened. However, as I said on Twitter, I didn't review it because I farmed it out well in advance when I was on my festival tour. But the thing that I liked about Mr. Robot is that it's a terrible name.
Yep.
Right? I immediately didn't want to watch it because it was called Mr. Robot. It's a terrible name.
It's one letter away from being a Styx song.
Right. That's... Christian Slater is in it, and he's been a kind of a show killer, and he actually is Mr. Robot.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. But he is not really the star. Rami Malek is the star. You might have remembered him as an amazing guy from The Pacific. So fantastic actor, who, by the way, is the quintessential actor who saves an entire series by his magnificent performance.
Huh.
Rami Malek is so great in this, by the way, and I think he's going to start. He's going to get talk about a supporting actor role for Emmys. Probably not this year because it opens so late, but certainly next season, especially if it's renewed. Which actually, it already was renewed. It was renewed before it even aired.
Wow.
For season two, because the reviews were so good. Although I did laugh that I joined the chorus of people saying the same thing. I didn't think this was going to be any good at all. I didn't even want to watch it. That's pretty much how every review starts. But I watched it and I liked it. The caveat is that if you didn't have Rami Malek in this role, I don't think it would be nearly as good because a lot of I think James Poniewozik from Time had a great line. He said, you know, if you take Rami Malek out of this and have another actor play this role, it would be like a Reddit screed.
Huh, interesting.
It's just a big, gigantic Reddit rant about what's wrong with corporate America and technology and the 1% and, you know, all these easy targets that are to hit. But I liked it, and he's amazing. I think that... the writing is good enough to get the ideas across, and I think that if it can keep up the quality as it goes forward, and again, people who have only saw two episodes, I just saw the one, have said they both like. In fact, the second episode gets better. They like where it's going, and I liked the first pilot a lot.
Sort of a techno thriller kind of.
It is definitely a techno thriller. Mm-hmm. It's about trying to bring the, you know, there's two sides. There's Evil Corp, which is basically E Corp. They call it Evil Corp, which is basically like a Microsoft, but also like a multinational Microsoft who's into other things besides technology. And that's the one side. And the other side is these hackers who are tired of, you know, credit card debt and all the world, and they want to create another. They want to make sure that Too Big to Fail is never used again, that there can be failure, and we're going to bring the world to its knees by hacking into these things and creating a global economic meltdown. And but there's a twist to how they want to do that. They just don't want everybody to die. They want to basically erase everybody's debt. Huh. People who are in debt and can't afford to pay it, they want to erase it. And so then you have that. So the star has to choose, because maybe the Evil Corp is not so evil, we might find out, or maybe the people who are, you know, on the computer hackers are who are striving for this main goal, or maybe not as clean as they seem. So who knows? I mean, that's the premise, basically.
All right.
Yeah.
I as a little sidebar here, Bart, one of our letters this week was there was a little section about Mr. Robot in it. John in the 248
Ooh.
A lot of even numbers there.
2-4. I kind of like that's easy to remember. That's the Michigan. 2-4-8. Okay, Michigan. Well done. 2-4-8.
He said, I was setting my DVR up to record the first episode of Mr. Robot. I noticed each episode is titled as if it were a video file on my computer. And that's true. Like, the first episode is EPS1.0_HelloFriend.mov. And episode 2 is EPS1.1_1sandzeros.mpeg. And they all have a different, like, video file extension at the end, but they're all labeled as if you were downloading them from BitTorrent or something, where it's 1.1, 1.2, all of that, which I thought was really clever. So he said, now, while Jason will tell us that unlike CMND:/crash, this is not a thing. Correct. This is a thing.
This is a thing.
What are the chances this backfires when some MPAA automated takedown system erases the show from the internet by asking Google to remove every discussion of the show? That made me laugh. So thank you to John and the 248. It is a thing, though. And I was encouraged by that. I saw this and I said, this seems to be a show made by people who actually understand the jokes they're making. Whereas the titles of the episodes of CSI Cyber suggest that the people do not understand and may not have even used a computer.
Right. Exactly.
So that's a good sign.
Yeah, and there's humor, there's good drama, there's humor. He's a very flawed character, who's great, but there is good tech humor, and there's and they call people out for thinking they know tech and they don't know tech on a level of this. So there is that thing where, like, there's clearly somebody in the IT world who's pretty good at what they do, but Rami Malek's character, it basically is like, this guy shouldn't even shouldn't even be hired. He's so bad. So there's that. There's good tech humor, right. I think they do know what they're doing.
Cool. Okay, mm-hmm. Mr. Robot USA. That premiering, I think, what, today?
It premiered yesterday. Already, but they are going to repeat it.
All right. I think the first episode is free online too.
Yeah, it is free online, and you can and they will repeat it before next week's episode. Right. No doubt.
Silver lining. I wanted to, before we do some rapid fire stuff, I wanted to mention you did a live blog on the Hollywood Reporter's website, the Will Ferrell, Kristen Wiig, Deadly Adoption Lifetime movie. How'd that go? You survived, obviously, because you're here talking to me.
I did survive it. You know, it was one of those things where I think in retrospect, when it was done, they would have been better served to have tongue-in-cheeked it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. They played it straight like a Lifetime movie, and as many people, including myself, pointed out, Lifetime movies do that already. Lifetime movies are already bad, and they're kind of like spoofs of themselves. And so to spoof a Lifetime movie is kind of redundant. And it wasn't as funny as I think that they thought it was going to be, particularly in the first half. The second half did pick up a lot and got funnier because it got crazier. I wish it had been way more crazy from the beginning. A lot of people tuned out and they were like, you know what? This isn't funny. It's just, you know, David Lore actually pointed out too that our fill-in host of Record pointed out that they got the mundane parts of it and the boring stuff perfect, and they just didn't wink enough. And the winking part, they should have done more. They actually, only time they actually really winked, I mean, it got really crazy at the end, which was interesting. But the only time they winked was when the credits were rolling and they were doing a little dance inside their kitchen. It was basically the, ha-ha, we're going to do a little funny dance and we're going to wink. But if they had done it more tongue-in-cheek, it would have been a lot funnier.
Well, if I was thinking about this, that if they had done this script without famous people, without Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig, you know, Funny or Die makes a deal with Lifetime. They're going to do this thing. It's going to look, by all accounts, like a regular Lifetime movie, but it's actually a prank on Lifetime movie viewers. And about an hour in, things get increasingly bizarre. I think that would be kind of a good joke.
Yeah.
That's a too many cooks kind of, you know, it's right. Just an extended joke. But the problem is that the moment that you see Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig in it, you just expect it to be a parody from start to finish. And your expectations are different at that point. And it sounds like they did something that would have been funny if it had just gone like completely below the radar and people would have been like, what the hell just happened? To being like, you know, again, entertain me now, because I see that that's Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig. And to wait an hour to get to that point, maybe that was a misfire.
It was too much. They were, you know, again, to your point, they're neon noticeable actors.
Yeah.
And you expect it to be. And you know what? I think based on the lead up to it, I think that that almost the whole joke was, will it be a spoof or will it not be a spoof? Yeah. Which is ruined because that's not really something you want to spend 2 hours watching to find out.
Or if it hadn't leaked, who knows? If it hadn't leaked, maybe they would have put it out without, you know, naming the actors who were in it, and it would have surprised
everybody.
No, because
they put a sign up on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, but wasn't there was a leak like 4 months ago or something that?
Yeah, the Hollywood Reporter actually broke the story.
See, you guys ruined it.
Mm-hmm. We did. It's our fault.
You ruined the
joke.
Totally
ruined it. So I think that you know, because in the second half of the hour when it gets ludicrous and it becomes kind of funny, then you're like, okay, well, why? If you're gonna do it now,
right?
You know,
why
if
not?
You're gonna make it, yeah, why not do it the first hour? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the first hour I kept saying, you know what, Kristen Wiig is just acting. She's not being funny. She's just acting. And at some point I kept thinking, I think she kind of really likes acting like this. Like, she's really trying hard. She's a good actress. So she's really trying hard to work on her craft.
So it sounds like this wasn't bad. It was just weird.
It was weird, but you want it to be funny. And so you waste an hour of your time and you're thinking, it's not funny. It could have been so much funnier. That's a letdown to me.
All right.
There you go.
Oh, well, Deadly Adoption. At least you had the live blog to keep you entertained.
I did it. Yeah, it was fun. It was good times.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk. We have our nerd TV check-in. You thought that Humans and Mr. Robot was not enough, but there are more nerd things. They put all the nerdy shows on during the summer, I think.
Apparently, yeah.
So, Extant coming back?
Ah, yes. Yes. So, second season of that with some pretty big changes to it, too. You know, that's Wednesday, July 1st. CBS is, you know, once they had Under the Dome be a success in the summer, they put this up there. You know, I met the guy who created it. He was on a panel at the ATX Festival in Austin with me. I like him. He's very good. He's a very nice guy. And I think that he would wants to make this a little bit more sci-fi and weird than it is. And I think they're going in that direction. Whether they pull it off this year, I don't know. They made some pretty big cast changes, like two or three of the main characters from last season, not Halle Berry. We'll be back. So you can see lovely Halle Berry running around, stuff blowing up. I think it's going to be a little bit more action-packed this year because now we know that, you know, there's a surreal sci-fi element very much in place, and they're here kind of thing. So it'll take that one step on. They're really going to need the ratings to spike because it started off huge last year, and then it went down like a mountain, like skiing down the side of a mountain. That's what the ratings look like. And they plateaued at some point, but enough to get renewed, but it's going to have to spike or we won't see it again. So, okay. But it could be interesting. It's something to watch in the summer. Normally I would say that, Jason, hey, it's something to watch in the summer, but oh my God, there's so many shows.
In these times of confusion, that might
times
not be
times of
enough.
Confusion. There's so many shows.
We got to say that like every week now, but there are, it's just, there's too much. There is too much. I want to give you my nerd TV report. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, I don't need to talk about it anymore. I've seen two episodes now. I give it my wholehearted endorsement. You should check it out. It's great.
Yay! I have a question for you.
Yes,
on that.
Yes, sir.
Do you know if they are repeating that?
I don't know that. I was going to say about Extant that one of the things about that that's interesting is they're doing I assume they're doing it again, the Amazon streaming thing where a few days afterward you can watch those episodes on Amazon instant if you miss them, which is like really convenient.
Yes, and I think that would be very helpful for people for in all of television based on our times of confusion. So I hope this
I'm sure Jonathan Strange is on demand at the very least, but I don't know if they're repeating them.
Okay. All right. Well, we need to find that out.
We should dig that up.
We'll dig that up. But so you watch the second episode and you're in.
Thumbs up. I'm all the way in. I'm sold on it.
You know what? I just want to throw this out there. I think there may have, because you told you in last week's critical takedown or actually support of this series, you said you liked this, that the special effects were better than you thought they were going to be and everything worked out. And the person who reviewed it for THR was complaining about the CGI. And I wonder if the advanced DVDs, as they often do, don't have completed CGI or they have a lower res or some where it's just not as good.
Yeah.
Because he was complaining about the CGI on that. And, you know, I trust you explicitly when it comes to that. And if you think it's good, I'm good.
It didn't bother me at all. I mean, there is a scene where a guy makes, like, statues move, and it looks like statues are moving because, you know, they're statues. They're not.
Right.
I'm not quite sure. I was satisfied with it, and I like some of the magic effects that they seem strange, and I like that. That's what magic should seem, is sort of strange. But I love the look of it in general. So that gives my endorsement. I did watch a second episode of Dark Matter, the Canadian series that's on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yes,
that's the we really want to sort of be like Firefly, and it's the Stargate producers, and I loved Stargate when it was on. It's got a lot of familiar faces on it. I'll put it this way: I'm not going to watch any more episodes of Dark Matter. Yeah. Gasp. Well, in these times of confusion, Tim, I got better stuff to watch. And the fact is, I feel like these characters are just, you know, sort of types. And this premise, like I said, where they don't, you know, they don't know who they are, but they're slowly finding out their secret past. And they're in this. I feel like it was a mistake to start telling the story the way they did, because I don't, you know, I'm sort of not interested in this universe hasn't grabbed me. It's just sort of some people on a spaceship, and the people didn't really grab me either. So, you know, I wouldn't say that it was bad, but I would say that in the second episode, I got bored fast, and there's no time. I have no time for a show that just completely bores me. So
say no more.
Sorry, Dark Matter.
I totally understand.
I'm you know, sorry, I should say. Sorry.
Sorry. Sorry.
Sorry to the Canadians who made Dark Matter.
Oh, by the way, speaking of TV that you would think that we would just not watch anymore and it would go away, they renewed Aquarius.
So I got a letter about that.
Okay.
Well, I mean, let's just, I've got a couple other items that we'll get to in a minute, but just to get to Aquarius. Okay. So two things. Hibsy wrote in on Twitter just saying Aquarius was renewed. Why, Tim? Why? And Andrew in the 925 wrote in and said, can you, longtime listener, first time emailer. Hi, Andrew. Can you please explain to me why Aquarius was renewed? It seems like a PR move with no accompanying financial or artistic reasoning. Have we finally crossed the threshold where Network Flax will spend more time talking digital numbers for shows and their press releases than the actual Nielsen numbers that bring in the money? What do you think? Explain it. Explain why, Tim. Why? Aquarius, why?
It happened in the same week that they canceled Hannibal. Which people were like, whoa, what? I mean, there are obviously clearly different reasons that Hannibal got 3 seasons, but at the same time, but you know what? There is, I saw that and I was mystified. I remain mystified. And I think that the only way, this is like Chinatown, the movie. So it's NBC people. Just, you can't figure it out. It's NBC. They literally dumped this on the internet, taking away all of its ratings. And they think it was good enough to read. It's NBC.
It's NBC. Forget it.
No explanations. Forget it.
There's no way to explain it. It's NBC.
Forget it, kids.
Yep.
It's NBC.
One last thing. We promoted this for a while now, but next week we actually will see the premiere of James Patterson's Zoo, a show on CBS in which animals get really mad at people. And I will watch it because that is a pact that I've made with you and the listeners. So just stay tuned for that in a couple of weeks. I'll report back having seen a couple episodes of James Patterson.
I can't wait for you to report back on that. And here's where I really want you to focus some of your attention, because this is where my first question will come.
Yes.
Because in the description, it says, because there's obviously a global pandemic.
Of angry animals.
Right. And it causes them, quote, to launch violent, coordinated attacks against humans. I want to know how they did the coordination.
Okay. I'll watch for it. I'll see if they're giving each other the high sign, a little side eye.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, Planet of the Apes, you know, Caesar can kind of talk, but he speaks ape to the other apes.
Yeah.
But how do you go interspecies and coordinated attacks?
How does the toucan tell the
wolf?
The wolf how to attack.
And I want a shot of the wolf going, what the fuck is this bird saying? Mm-hmm. I don't get the toucan. What is the toucan? I don't. Right. Why is he on our side? What can the toucan do?
It's Señor Toucan from Dora the Explorer.
Exactly.
He's here to teach us Spanish.
I want, if there's a shot of a mystified wolf who swears like I just swore, to give us the explicit line.
Tag. Thank you.
I want that wolf to like, what the, I don't get the, what are you doing, bird? That's just bullshit. I want to coordinate my attacks against humans.
The wolf has to get out the toucan to wolf dictionary and try to look up what the heck he's talking about.
I'm
from Canada.
That.
You're from, I don't know, somewhere, you know,
South America,
maybe. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. You're from Panama. You're from Colombia. I'm from Canada. I don't understand. No speaka the toucan. Okay, says the wolf.
See, I would totally watch a funny version of Zoo.
Okay,
where one of the characters is just a really angry wolf who can't get the right directions to the coordinated attack on humans, and is just grumpy and angry. I would totally watch that.
All right, it's a show where the animals can't get their act together.
They can't get
saying.
Their shit together. Nope. Oh, I would love that. The wolf comes in. He's like, "Are you going to kill somebody?" And they're like, "No, dude, it's not." No.
I am afraid that this is not going to be the show that I see.
You're afraid that it's not that?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Damn it.
So we should get to some really quick feedback from listeners. How about that?
Absolutely. Let's do that.
All right. So Amy, our friend Amy in the 415, who loves us very much. Says she says, "I would like to be the first to advertise on the podcast." But we had another advertiser because my wife wrote you a check for a very, very small sum of money.
Yes.
For our one advertiser.
We had one advertiser.
Although we did our demographic survey. I got to tell you, Tim, we put out the little demographic survey, which actually, if people didn't hear it last time, they can go to podsurvey.com / TV-talk-machine. podsurvey.com/TV-talk-machine. And you take a little survey and it helps our ad network figure out like who our listeners are and how great, and tell advertisers how great they are. And I looked at the demos, Tim. Demos are good. We got really good. We got really good demos, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I like that.
Just based on it, like our we're really strong in the 25 to 44.
As we should be.
I agree.
I am nothing but youthful.
That is a strong demo.
Yeah.
So that's hotness. What I'm saying. And some really good financial people saying that they make a lot of money and listen to the podcast, which is very nice. And I thought this was interesting. 6% of our listeners are either C-level, CEO, CFO, etc., president or vice president.
Nice.
So
nice.
We
I am
you.
Vice president of inanity.
Yeah, well, you know who's president. So Amy, even though you can't be the first advertiser, she is the president of her company. And so I'd like to say, listener feedback this week on the TV Talk Machine brought to you by True Marin Treats, gluten-free and dairy-free. It's that simple, delivered right to your door in Marin County, California, United Woo-hoo! States of America, Earth, Universe. Milky Way Galaxy Universe. Sorry, Milky Way Galaxy. I left that part out. Go to TrueMarinTreats.com. If you don't know how to spell Marin, you probably can't use this company because it only serves Marin County. Thank you, Amy, for sponsoring the podcast.
Nice.
I would like some treats now.
Yeah, we threw a freebie there. That's nice.
Yep.
And you know, pretty soon we're going to be like larded with ads. Like we'll be unlistenable. There'll be some ads. It'll be impossible.
There'll be just at the simultaneous worldwide release of advertising.
What's going to happen? Next time when I go into my wolf/toucan rant, there'll be a pause between it for like, you know.
Animals coordinating attacks this week, brought to you by Squarespace. following up on our Game of Thrones conversation, Scott in the 913 wrote in, and his point was he was basically just giving us a bucket full of despair. He's like, "I feel like we've never had a single meaningful victory by the good guys to make us feel in the slightest way that there's a chance they might ever win." And he goes on. So he basically is saying it's this complete lack of hope and any concerns about how they can realistically introduce any this late in the day without it seeming like a cheat that have soured me on the show. Talk me off the ledge, Scott. So what I will say is I actually think one of the reasons that people stick with the show is that there are always glimmers of hope. Plus, there's, I think, an implicit social contract with a show like this, a contract between the creators and the viewers, that there is going to be a satisfying resolution of some sort. And it may not be, you know, not everybody's going to go out okay, but I do feel like ultimately they're going to turn the tide against the White Walkers. Somebody is going to, at least to a certain degree, unify Westeros, and who that is and all the, you know, sort of sad things that happen to most of the other characters in the meantime, sure, but I do think we're going to get there. And I think you can't overlook like the scene where Daenerys is reborn with the dragons and all of that. That's an amazing scene. There's the battle at the wall that we saw. The Blackwater is a great mm-hmm. scene. I think that there has been a lot of that kind of really cool stuff that's happened. And yeah, it's bittersweet at times, but I think it hasn't been all dark. I think it's been darker lately. But again, I think that's Act Two, and we had damn well better see a sort of upsweep the last couple of seasons.
We need more heroes. I agree with him, though, that we need more heroes, because I think they're coming.
Daenerys and Tyrion getting together, I thought, was a great moment of like, yeah, they're together now.
Uh-huh. But you know what? Just as somebody who was a fan of Daenerys at the beginning, and now she's like bogged down in like making a city work. Oh my God. Was there not like an hour of her like the plumbing in this? I got to fix the plumbing in this town first.
I got to listen to all these people who have to have problems with their goats.
Yeah, like that. I just want her to be a more effective queen, a more powerful queen.
They put her on a dragon and she flew out of town. So,
they did. They put it on there. But then we ended it with her not being able to fly the dragon and falling off.
Because the dragon is just lazy now.
Right.
He's eating too many goats.
Yeah, so I want to see her be kind of more of a badass. I agree that we kind of need more of a hero, more Jorahs.
I hear you. But I think, Scott, I think it's coming. I think it's coming. Stay off the ledge.
Yeah, stay off the ledge. I think that definitely it's coming. We know we can kill White Walkers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's going to be some satisfaction there.
I'm telling you right now, I don't know this for sure, but if you put a toucan in season 6 or 5,
talking to the direwolf. Goes to the John's direwolf.
Well, John comes back.
John comes back as a toucan.
I think he lives anyway. I'm a believer now that he's alive. Because the dire wolf. You know. Mm-hmm. There's a hero right there.
Yeah, I know. James Patterson Zoo. Game of Thrones crossover. Dire wolf. this conspiring animals thing. It's going to be big.
Something's big here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's see. We have Kelsey in the 425,
okay.
Who says, I found and binged on your podcast a few months ago, but I've been current and listening every week for a little while. So Kelsey survived the binge.
Survived it, okay. Mm-hmm. Is that she or he?
I don't know. It's just Kelsey. Kelsey,
okay, Kelsey, either way. Okay, either way, we'll go. Doesn't matter.
I'm the atypical listener because I watch very little television, like almost none. Basically, this is because I'm indecisive. When overwhelmed by choices, times of confusion, my instinct is to say, screw this and do nothing. And TV feels like such a commitment. I live in constant fear of choosing the wrong show. So let me get to my point. Back in the latter months of 2014, I saw promos for Ascension, thought it looked amazing and tailor-made for me to adore it, but in the insanity that was my life, I missed it and forgot about it. Then I find your podcast. Jason says good things about it. I can't get my hands on it. Then you mention it's on Netflix. I binge-watched the entire thing that afternoon, thinking in the back of my mind that Jason mentioned the possibility that it might turn into a full series, and then I was destroyed when I found out Sci-Fi isn't making any more of it because it was far and away the best thing they've aired in years. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to make you fine gentlemen feel bad for luring me into my worst nightmare, because it really is my own fault for letting you be my sole provider of TV knowledge. That was a mistake. Except, no, I am. But I'm still listening, and maybe I'll even watch more TV. Suggestions welcome, Kelsey in the 425.
Oh, that's true.
We just, the whole roller coaster there. It's like we mentioned Ascension. We talked about it. I thought it was pretty good and had some interesting ways to go. The ratings were kind of lukewarm. And it came on streaming, but they're not going to make any more of that. So we're sorry.
So I was ready for more Ascension.
I know.
I mean, that was...
So was I.
Yeah. So that was too bad. But yeah, is a very funny letter from Kelsey, because it was like my worst nightmare was fulfilled by the podcast.
Yeah.
Right?
We did it. We ruined it all. Well,
there's some irony there, because what we do is a public service. We try to winnow out the crap, but somehow... we need to steer Kelsey to a show that we know is going to be around or has been around, and he or she can go catch up on them, because that's what we do. We try to save people time. We're a public service.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like a PSA.
Yeah, Jonathan Strange, Mr. Norrell, good one on BBC America. It's a mini series, so it will end after 8 episodes, but be done, and the story will be completed.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, Tim, I would much rather watch something like Ascension that I kind of got a kick out of over 3 or 4 nights than watch more Dark Matter.
Right.
That's just
that's a
boring.
Good point.
Even if Dark Matter went on for a couple, I can't even say it, many seasons and had a resolution, you know, I found it kind of boring, and I thought Ascension was much more interesting. So I would, even though it didn't have an ending, I will have some fond memories of just how crazy that show was, because it was crazy. Crazy plot twists and stuff. So sometimes it's about the journey, and sometimes the journey ends in a car crash, and that's the end of the journey. But
that's it.
It was a good journey.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of big twists, a couple notes about Wayward Pines. Jason Barry on Twitter said episode 5, The Game Changer, was pretty lame. It didn't reveal anything as crazy as I expected. And our pal Alan in the 415 said he bailed on it because he felt it suffered from 2 fatal flaws. First, the whole mystery hinged entirely on the utterly goofy premise that if we told people what was really going on, they'd get sad and kill themselves. I hate when shows force their characters to act against their own self-interest in order to prolong the mystery. And second, the big reveal of what's really going on is so completely random, arbitrary, and non-character driven that I found it hard to care. It was very Deus Ex Machina. Contrast that with Ascension, in which both the mid-season reveal and the final episode reveal made sense in terms of the evidence that was shown on screen and the motivations of the characters. Yeah, that's a true point. So some pushback on Wayward Pines.
That is a true point. However, what? How could you not be like surprised when it was in total insanity? It's like a whole, like, what? There, it's what year? It's, who are these things? I thought that was it was surprising because I did not see that coming. Mm. So whoever saw that coming, points to you, because wow. I get the point about very funnily saying that, you know, we can't tell anybody because they'll kill themselves.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing. Although I'm going to just put my hat on here and say, you know, that's not far-fetched. People get because the idea was that kids, younger people, are probably, because their cerebral cortexes have not all met up in the middle or in the front or the back, they're going to roll with it more, whereas an adult will say, oh, wow, I can comprehend that that's not good, and you've shocked the hell out of me, and I can't believe I'm here, I'm going to kill myself. I think that's not out of the realm of possibility, and that's usually that's my thing. Is it not out of the realm of possibility of human behavior? So,
all right.
But I'm going to keep watching because, like I said, I kind of like that it's crazy. I don't love the show. I loved the first 2 episodes of Humans. I didn't love the first 2 or even the first 5 of Wayward Pines, but I wanted to finish watching it knowing that once I watch 10, it's all wrapped. So I'm going to keep going.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, our friend, the Dodger fan.
Oh, that.
said, he sent us some tweets while he was hate watching Scorpion. And I'll just read them. Skype works down to a kid who is underground in a sinkhole. # not a thing. Now the kid is almost underwater and holding a phone almost underwater. # not a thing. Okay, now the news channel has picked up Skype. Picked up a Skype call. # not a thing. So thank you, Jake. I don't know why you did that to yourself. Scorpion, not a good show, just not as ridiculous as CSI Cyber, I think. At least from what I've seen.
Yeah.
It's cool. It could be.
It sounds ridiculous. Like it's getting a lot worse. It sounds like Scorpion's getting worse.
Scorpion. CBS. I hope there's a crossover next year between CSI Cyber and Scorpion. That would be great.
It does make you think that no one at CBS knows how to log onto a computer.
Nope,
right?
Not interested.
It makes you think that all the jokes about it being the old network and the ageist thing mm-hmm. is actually true, that they go home and no one checks email or has a Twitter account or anything like that.
So maybe CBS, the people at CBS, maybe they do have computers, but they realize their audience doesn't understand computers.
Right.
And so they, you know, it's that kind of show. It's like computers for people who don't know what computers are.
CBS, our audience is always at 12 o'clock.
Mm.
You get that? Right. See that joke I made about how like the lights go out and then it says 12 and you can't.
12 o'clock.
Yep.
James from the 859 says, do you have any thoughts about the
859?
gonna do that? Do the work there?
Yeah, yeah, I want
Kentucky.
Whoa, Kentucky,
Kentucky.
Wow. Okay, so we put the Justified theme on.
It's a little Justified territory there.
Wow, wow.
Any thoughts on the second season of Halt and Catch Fire? I think it's really moving in the right direction, away from some of the poor choices in season one and broadening out the characters. But I don't think it's quite there compared to the other shows AMC has put on. You checked in with that one?
I did. I am way, way behind. I'm not caught up with it. I think there's 5 or 6 episodes of it already. And from, yeah, the general consensus in the critical community, certainly people I like, is, and I saw the start, and so I agree that this is already early on for me a much better season. Although I liked the last couple of episodes in season one. I like the changes that they made, and they certainly made the female characters better and expanded their world, which is good. But according to people who actually are way ahead of me and have seen the 5th or 6th episode, that I think last week they said, I read somewhere that a lot of people were saying that last week was the best episode yet of the series, which is really a good sign as you're heading towards the little bit past the middle of the season. That's always a good sign. I mean, it's not Hell on Wheels, but yeah. What are you going to say?
All right. Oh, yes, sir. Oh, great one. Yes. I realized the other day that classic Saturday Night Live sketch about Johnny Carson trying to be more like Arsenio Hall, mm-hmm. that, of course, features the Ed McMahon line, old reference lost on younger viewers, is itself an old reference that is lost on younger viewers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Man.
It's just staring at itself, yep. as a meta feeling.
It is
feeling
its
of,
own yeah. old reference now.
Meta nostalgia.
Dean from I Am Not a Number, I Am a Free Man.
Nice. I am not a number.
Prior to season 2 of Silicon Valley, we were told there would be greater female presence. There was a good episode with a woman programmer, but she didn't have much to do after she was introduced. The woman CEO appeared at the beginning and end of the season, but not much in between, and Monica didn't have much to do. With the various girlfriends and ex-girlfriends last season, I'm not convinced there was any change in the ratio of male to female airtime. Don't get me wrong, with the end of Mad Men and Justified, Silicon Valley is probably my favorite show, but do you think the writers just have a hard time trying to fit women into this geek world?
Well, they probably the funniest episode was written by a woman this year, so that helps. I think they have women in the more women in the writer's room. That is helpful. I would like to see more of the female CEO who replaced the actor who died, and I think that I like the fact that she's a little bit on the spectrum like he was, because mm-hmm. they can kind of keep the same they can kind of keep the same vibe and at the same time kind of spoof leadership qualities. I will say that, yes, the one woman that they did bring in didn't get as much screen time as I had hoped. Although I think when they focused on her, that it was good. I love the fact that, trying to play the two women, like, of course they would be best friends because they're women, was very funny. And that was a little bit of spoofing themselves a little bit. I actually don't know what the timing was when they brought those actresses in. So I would hope going forward that she has a bigger role. And I think that's important, that she has a bigger role. And all of them do. So all three of the ones mentioned, I hope they have bigger roles in season 3. It's always an issue. And I think that you and I, Jason, have talked. The reason that they need someone like that is because there's so much more material to have a woman in Silicon Valley and what her struggles are and what where you can mine humor.
So much bad
from
behavior
her.
Where humor can be mined out of it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So I'm hoping that they get on that. I don't think that they nailed it this year. That said, it was season 2 was – I loved season 1, but season 2 was exponentially better than season 1. And it's a great sign for a very, very funny sitcom.
Yeah. I agree. Let's see. We got one from Drew, who has told us his whole life history. This is Drew from the 937, who moved to the 614, who moved to the 202. It's a lot of numbers, Drew.
A lot of numbers.
Settle down. Settle down. Does Tim and Jason, does the structure of TV anthology shows protect high quality early seasons from being tainted by subpar future seasons. The drop in quality of True Detective isn't annoying me as much as I thought. Subpar later seasons of a TV show usually have a strong tendency to undermine the entertainment value of early great seasons. Stupid plot arcs, poor character development, etc., all run backwards and diminish the value of the original. Since seasons of an anthology series don't share characters, actors, or a common plot, are they somehow immune to being ruined by later seasons? Great question.
Great question. I mean, it's. I was just going to say that is one of my favorite questions. I mean, it's not the question about the dogs and how that was answered. I mean, that was right. I mean,
yeah.
I can't remember her name, but because I can't remember anybody's name.
No.
But that was like, that's the bar, right? Yeah. That question is the bar. That's the greatest question in podcasting history. This is a great question. I love this question because it's really true. He's totally nailed it here because, yes, I think you're right. I think that if you have an existing cast, and then they all kind of suck, or the season sucks the second time. It's not so fun to go back and watch the season before and then this one. And God forbid you pile up two in a row of bad seasons, and then you're really starting to not like the show at all. But I think that, yes, True Detective season one is immune to the kickback that's happening in season two. And, you know, season one had its own kickback because of the plot problems. But I still think it was a great season based on the actors making more of the material, even if maybe the material was quote unquote borrowed from someone else. It was actually good material, and they made the most of it. The second season of True Detective doesn't have very good acting. It's not throughout, but it's spotty, and the writing is not as good, and the whole plot is not as good. So, and like I said, I've seen the first three, so it doesn't get better in the first three. But yeah, I don't think that, and I don't expect True Detective to get much better. I'm not like a person who wants things to fail. So I hope it turns around and gets better. I'm not going to put a lot of faith in that. But if season two sucks, I guarantee you they will make a third season. And then, you know, I won't care if the third season's great. I won't care about the second season. I don't think season two is messing up season one. Not at all.
Yeah, I was reading this question thinking of – I was just reading the Entertainment Weekly article about them, the six new X-Files episodes that they're making. And I am simultaneously excited because I loved that show when it was on. And also I've got exactly what Drew described here, which is this retroactive feeling of kind of queasiness because it didn't end well, right? They kind of screwed a bunch of stuff up. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they had to live with – the stupid decisions that they made instead of giving us sort of like the classic show that we loved. They've got to live up to the stupidity that came later. And that's, it's difficult, but I think it's absolutely true. Anthologies. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just, it's a cover with a whole bunch of different stories inside of it. And the name of the show is the cover. And
exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. All is forgiven. If True Detective season two doesn't do it for you and they come back for a season three and it's great, then it's, you know, people will just remember. People will start saying, well, watch season one and then season three. And
right.
You can skip season two. Like, kind of like Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, season two is Friday Night Lights. That didn't ruin it.
Now that, well, that's a show that just basically pretended the second season didn't happen.
Didn't happen
at
all.
Literally just, I don't know, that guy who moved in, what was his name? The kid who moved in with Buddy. Mm-hmm. He was like, nope, never happened. Don't know what you're talking
death?
About. I don't have
what
a...
Was there a murder?
We didn't kill anybody. Nope.
Nope. No.
Landry and Tyra don't even know each other.
I will add to that, like, your worries about X-Files. I have the same worries because I loved X-Files. Loved X-Files. But let me tell you, my worries about X-Files are nowhere near my worries for Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk about mucking up a great series.
I mean,
season two.
My memory of season two is that it actually got really it didn't get really good. It got a lot better at the end, but the beginning, when they wrapped up that first story arc and all of that, then they literally had no idea what to do.
Oh.
And the last few I thought was like, oh, okay, they've sort of figured out where to go next, but you know, it was too late. It was just too late at that point. So now what are they going to do? I mean, the nice thing is that if they know they've just got eight episodes or whatever, that they presumably will tell a story over eight episodes and not, you know, run out of story or not finish the story. And that's my hope about the X-Files too, is that doing six episodes that they'll just, you know, they'll keep it constrained. They're not going to try to parlay this into, you know, eight more seasons. They can just tell a story and be done.
Right.
So, but yeah, you're right. I'm actually a little more confident about the X-Files now that I know that Chris Carter's not writing all the episodes, that they brought back Glenn Morgan and James Wong, and they brought back Darren Morgan, who was their best writer. He's writing an episode of those six. That is exciting. Unfortunately, they couldn't get Vince Gilligan back, although they tried, apparently. And they
couldn't have Battle Creek anymore, so what the heck?
And they couldn't get Frank Spotnitz back because he's shooting, I think, simultaneously with the X-Files shooting in Vancouver. A little Canadian update for you. They're also shooting The Man in the High Castle, which is Frank Spotnitz's show, which was that Amazon pilot that was really good.
Yes.
So, you know, but they got some of the really good X-Files writers back. So it's not all just kind of Chris Carter running around by himself, which would concern me because he's problematic. Guy.
He's very problematic to that being good.
Yeah.
Yes. Can I just add on to really quickly to our talk about anthologies?
Yes.
And I've said this many times. I will reiterate it once again. I've always thought Fargo, which was much better than the first season of True Detective, even though I liked the first season of True Detective, Fargo was much better. I do believe it has a much, much better chance of the second season of Fargo. Well, now the bar's lower because we know TD season 2 is not very good. But I have utmost faith that Fargo season 2 will be great.
Let's end with a nice letter from John in the 925. Not to be confused with the other Johns in the other area codes. See, this is why we do the area codes.
You know what messes me up? 425 messes me up.
Yeah.
That one I don't get. The 428, I get that one.
Yeah.
425, I have no idea where that is.
Yeah.
I think it's Seattle, you said.
Yeah.
Right.
This is the 925 though. This is the Dolly Parton. This is the Far East Bay.
Yeah, Far East Bay, way out there. Yeah.
He says, Tim, which will linger longer in the dopamine producing parts of your brain, the run of Mad Men or the Warriors season? And then, does writing about good TV shows increase or detract from your enjoyment of them? Sports writers inevitably end up jaded and cynical, wearing ugly sweaters and yelling at kids to get off their lawns. Yes, I do mean Ray Ratto. What becomes of old TV critics? Do they slip blissfully into their dotage, or do they spend their waning days writing angry letters to TV executives demanding that they make the Deadwood movie?
Well, I like that letter. That's very nice. Let me start by saying I love Ray Ratto. He's one of the people who, as a writer, who I've been employed for a very long time. Ray was actually employed, I won't say well before me, because I don't want to seem like it's a huge age gap, but I read Ray when I was in college. To me, he is, you know, a joke about like when papers just cost a quarter. He's worth 25 cents a day, and now 50 cents. And I don't know what you pay a dollar for. I don't actually open a newspaper anymore, but I read Ray all the time, no matter what the topic is, because he is consistently great, and the dude can bring it on a number of topics. That said, I will say that to answer the first question, Mad Men will linger longer in my brain because it was seven seasons and I was super tied to it. Although the joy that I felt for the Warriors cannot be equaled by Mad Men, so there's that. So still on a high about the Warriors, and I believe that much like the first season of Mad Men, we have built a dynasty now. The next three or four seasons of the Warriors could be amazing, so that's good. And no, writing about a great series does not detract. It actually makes – I loved writing about Mad Men and when I did it, The Sopranos and Breaking Bad. I wrote every week about those series, and I don't regret that. I mean, that was a lot of work, but I don't regret it at all because it made my understanding, and I was able to bring added benefit criticism to people who read me and hopefully opened their eyes to some of the thematic themes of the series and made their enjoyment better, I hope. So no, I think it's great. I love that. That doesn't make me jaded at all. But I think I will watch TV. I'm going to be a TV critic for I'm going to dominate for a whole bunch more years. I technically, you know, I'm Steph Curry. So I'm going to be draining a bunch of threes for a number of years. I'm not going to retire.
MVP,
but when I do retire,
MVP.
Thank you. That's very Joe Garofoli of you. That's Thank very you. Good.
Symbol of quality.
Symbol of quality. I think that whenever I do retire, I'm going to watch a lot of TV because if it continues this arc, it's so much great stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to what retired TV critics do, our old pal Aaron Barnhart from the Kansas City Star, he's doing history books now. That's what he does.
Yeah.
He and his wife are like a, have a, they started a little small press doing history books. So he's, he doesn't have to watch TV anymore, basically, is the impression I get.
And maybe he doesn't. And like, and it may, and like, I've been enjoying watching some movies. I've been to new movies. I saw Mad Max, which I loved. I saw Inside Out, which I also loved.
Yeah, that was really good.
I didn't like the trailer at the beginning. Yeah.
Didn't like, you know, the short.
The volcano.
Volcano.
One.
Lava.
Yeah, lavas. Lava. Not a big fan of lava.
It's a movie talk machine with Tim Goodman.
And so I saw movies. So maybe in my retirement, I will see movies.
You branch out.
But here's a little hint, by the way. I'm also a former music critic, and I still, in my spare time, meaning my private, no one actually sees it, but they will eventually see it one day. I am writing about music, so stay tuned. Oh. You might see some more of that.
Intriguing. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we've wrapped it up for now. This has been another information-packed podcast, confusing those who have been following the TV Talk Machine since its early days.
Oh, yeah. OG people are like, they have a headache. They're like,
what just happened?
Whoa, way too much information.
Next week, I will be on assignment, and Mr. David Lohr will be joining you from the wilds of Indiana again.
Yes.
So I'm sure he's already preparing his material now.
As soon as he just heard that, and like a bat signal went off.
That's right.
He's making a list right now. He's prepping a list. He's got it. The guy's prepared.
He's laying amazing. In provisions. Yeah, he'll
absolutely
be ready to go. And in the meantime, I will be watching James Patterson Zoo. So, and we'll watch him for the wolf and see what the high sign is.
You know what we need, though? We need the numbers, and maybe we should tell people about that thing about the demos.
Oh, the numbers and the okay. All right. Thank you for reminding me. So, you can send an email. We had a very nice piece of feedback who said our email address was not on the website anywhere, so now it is. You can go to podcast@tvtalkmachine.com and you can email us. You can visit us at tvtalkmachine.com. We'll actually redirect you to the right webpage. You can tweet us at TVTM. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Tim is at Bastard Machine on Twitter, and I'm at Jay Snell. And if you would like to say who you are in order for us to get more awesome advertisers, not as awesome as Amy's Trumarin Treats, but still awesome, you can go to podsurvey.com/TV-talk-machine. Good demos.
Nice.
I just like saying good demos.
Good demos. I like the demos.
TV executive.
Yeah. Our demos are hot.
Strong in the demos. Strong good, in the key demos.
Yeah, killing it in the demo.
Yeah. Yeah, in our live plus seven demos.
Live plus three. That's where we get most of our money.
Yeah. All right. Live plus three. Podcasts, I don't know. Podcasts are more, actually, this is a little insidery, but podcasts are more like live plus 60. Live plus
they are,
45.
Actually.
Get long life.
They want long tails.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Long tails like the tails on the animals on James Patterson Zoo.
Oh,
coming soon to CBS.
No.
All right. Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
All right, Jason.
And we'll see you all next time.